give me one shot here on a blue chip stock, believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're going to have is that you didn't buy more.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street, your favorite draft analyst, the Draft Act, NBA Draft Podcast. Hitting you, we're approaching our final few podcasts of the 2022 cycle before the draft hits. You know, obviously we'll hit you with the post-draft analysis, but this episode, you know, normally we touch on one prospect and dive deep. We're still going to dive deep into these prospects, but today we wanted to hit on some of the remaining wings in the class that, you know, we didn't get to do a full episode on because honestly, the draft just snuck up on us. I feel like the last two drafts, man, have been this extended process, this extended cycle because of the COVID schedule where 2020, the draft was in November, I think. Last year, the draft was late in July. Yep. So, you know, we're back on a normal schedule. And it was like finals hit and boom. It was like, oh, we got to get a move on it. We got to bang out some prospects. We got to let the audience know how we feel about the rest of these guys who, you know, are first rounders potentially. So we are going to touch on the wings today. And that's Benedict Mathurin, Tari Eason, Shaedon Sharpe, and Usman Jang. So, Albert, as my co-host, I'm going to give you the opportunity to choose who we cover first.
Well, first off, hello, everybody. As Corey said, it's been a freaking mad dash to the finish line right now. Let's start with... You know what? Let's start with the guy who I'll be honest, I've watched the least of him out of the four, but from what I've seen, and I did watch him, the most intriguing, the most confusing, the most divisive, I think, of the four, maybe other than Eason, because Eason for random stuff, but Usman Jang. Can we start there? Because I have a lot of questions for you, Corey, about Usman Jang.
I'm not going to lie. I did not think that you were going with Usman Jang here. I thought you were talking about Shaedon Sharpe. Very interesting. Yeah, let's start it out with the Frenchman, Usman Jang. This is a country that your personal favorite team has not had success with drafting from after Frank Ntilikina. But Usman Jang, 6'9", 185-pound, 19-year-old from France, played overseas with the New Zealand Breakers this past year, and he is ranked 17 on the No Ceilings composite big board that is going to be dropping maybe if you're listening to this today or could be tomorrow. I'm not sure what the schedule is. But Usman Jang, really interesting prospect, man, because this is a kid who probably had the wildest swing out of any of the prospects as far as their draft stock hit, because they came in, you know, projected potential lottery guy and playing overseas in New Zealand, where we've seen with this team, a guy like RJ Hampton, maybe not get the run and have the team do as much for their draft stock as he'd have liked. So that's where Jang went, and he struggled immensely coming into the year, like really badly, to the point we were not entirely sure if this kid was going to, you know, be a 2022 guy. And then something happened, a flip switched, he felt more comfortable, he got some minutes, and the kid really started producing. And when I started watching that tape, I'm not going to lie, I started texting people and I posted in our group chat and I was like, yo, this kid can play, man. And you saw it in, you know, because I think his first game of the year, he had like a really solid game. He scored, he playmade, and you could see some of the passes he was making that there was just this intuitiveness that he played with that was really intriguing about him. And again, then he struggled and he wasn't getting a lot of run. He wasn't shooting it well. It was really bad. His frame, people said he's too skinny. He doesn't play with physicality. But for me, the first thing that jumped out, even after he started scoring and doing all of the stuff that he struggled with better, I think the thing that was a constant is he always kind of had the showed the playmaking feel. Even if it's not like necessarily in the numbers, the way that he passes, the way that he operates out of the pick and roll for a kid who's rumored to be 6'10", it's really impressive, man. Especially if he played, you know, this season as an 18-year-old. He just turned 19. I don't know. To me, he might be one of the three best passers in this draft. Like, he's up there for me with Jalen Williams as far as what his passing feel is like.
That's fair. I totally get it. I think there is a lot to like about Usman Jang. I remember last summer, I think it was either July or August, I think Mike Schmitz, he posted a video of Jang shooting in a gym. I think he was either in Vegas or in LA, and he kind of hinted, he was like, hey, this kid's a real prospect for next year. Keep your eye out. And I think that's when he first came up on my radar. And Corey, I have to say, like, I think you mentioned the passing, and I think the passing obviously is good, but the biggest thing is it felt like his season was literally a tale of two halves, which I think for me sometimes can make the evaluation that much harder, because you never want to be too extreme either way. You never want to put all your stock into the first half or all your stock into the second half. And you kind of have to level things out and be like, okay, so from the really crappy tape, what can we learn here? And then from the really good tape, what can we learn here? And I think ultimately with Jang, there's a reason why he's being mocked where he's being mocked right now in the lottery, because as much as the bad stuff was bad, even in the midst of the bad stuff, there was some good stuff. And Corey, you mentioned the playmaking is real, or at least the vision and the feel and all that stuff is definitely real. Is there room for improvement? Of course, which is what I'm trying to allude to right now. I think some of the decision-making will come, but the fact is this, Corey, and I really believe this, and I know we're going to try to make everything kind of compact here for all these prospects here, but I want to throw this in where I think sometimes, Corey, when it comes to vision, or not sometimes, but almost all the time, is either you're either born with it or you're not. And for the guys who are born with it, those guys are really special, because if you're born with the vision, then what NBA coaches and front offices and what coaching staffs can do is then refine what's already there. And it's not like it's something that they have to teach him to do. It's just, okay, you have this skill and we're going to refine it. That's what Jang is as a passer and as a playmaker. So I'm definitely there with you. And my biggest thing, Corey, you highlighted his playmaking. For me, I really like his frame. I know he's skinny. I get it. But you can see the outline of a frame that will be there soon, if that makes sense. Like, I don't look at his frame and worry like, okay, if you look at what was Terquavion Smith, right, from NC State, his frame concerns me, right? Fair. Usman Jang, though, even if he's skinny, I'm looking at him, I'm like, oh, okay, you're not far away from having an NBA body. With a different regimen and different program, you look like you're going to add weight and mass pretty easily. So I was actually very encouraged by his frame, was kind of what I wanted to highlight.
And I think that's important, because one of the things I think that he needs to improve upon is his physicality. I think that he definitely showed signs of improvements throughout the year. I think that he embraced contact more so in the latter half of the season than he did early on. And I don't think that's all that scary when you look at how young he was playing in a professional league, like, you know, the NBL. So it's not unusual, but it's something that he does need to continue to work on. I think that for as optimistic as I am about him as a processor, about his feel, and I really am, because I think it's pretty special stuff. When you see him attack the rim, he settles for a lot of floaters. He's not necessarily using his length to finish like up and through or try to like yam it on somebody's head. Cause I think he's not the bounciest guy ever. You know, he reminds me a little bit of like Paul George at times. Paul George would like, he would go in and try to like literally destroy your life as a dunker. And he doesn't have that mentality. And I don't think he has that same bounce. So maybe that's part of it, but he's long and he's a fine athlete. So I think there are times where he's got to be aggressive getting into the body of the rim protector. And I think that's something going forward he really needs to work on, because, you know, the touch is pretty okay on the floater, and I think that's a good shot, but that's like a good shot for somebody who's 6'4 or 6'5, not somebody who's going to be 6'10. 6'10, I want you to go in, get to the line, finish up and through, and every once in a while you bust out the floater to keep, you know, guys on their toes. But even still, I think he's capable of it, but aggressiveness is something that, like, also like feel, like the playmaking feel. Sometimes aggressiveness isn't always learned. Sometimes it is something that you have or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, Corey, I 100% agree with you, because there's one possession that comes to mind, like, vividly. New Zealand, I don't know any of the guys on their team really, Hugo. But it wasn't Hugo, but it was another guy. He's a guard. He's running pick and roll on the right side, right? And he comes over and Jang catches the ball. He throws it over to Jang on the weak side wing. He catches and he has the whole lane in front of him. And instead of going to the lane, he literally takes one dribble, stops at like foul line extended, and throws up this really nice footer that goes in. But it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen, because he has literally the whole lane in front of him and he just takes his one awkward dribble, lands on 2 feet, and throws up a floater. And I was like, okay, so this is weird. I think it's cool that it went in, and obviously the kid has touch, but at 6'10, like you're talking about, Corey, that should be a two-handed dunk with his testicles in somebody's face. Is what that should have been, 100%. So it was very confusing to watch him do that consistently. But yeah, I did want to throw that in there, because he does have touch. Like, clearly, he has pretty nice touch. The floater is real. But I'm with you, man. And like the physicality with him, hopefully, right, as he adds some more mass and he's a little bit more muscular, because you can see it. Like, his arms are like not twigs. He's got some mass on his arms, but it may not be like muscle right now. He is a little flabby, I thought, on his arms. It's hard to explain. It's like, maybe it's like baby dough is the best way to put it. But dude, I mean, he's going to be an NBA regimen, and that all that dough is going to turn into, exactly. It's kind of the Paul Pierce syndrome he has right now, but it's going to get toned and he's going to have cement for arms. So hopefully that'll give him more confidence to attack the rim, but I'm 100% with you, man. Right now it's way too many floaters.
Yeah. And I think the body, I think ultimately the guy that he might resemble is somebody that I'm sure he looks up to, and I think plays a little bit like, he said that he models his game after him a little bit, Nick Batum. I think he can get that, because Batum is pretty, you know, he's like a sturdy guy, especially in his prime. And even though he was long and lanky and thin, he had, you know, a frame that, like, he wasn't going to get pushed around necessarily. So I think that's kind of the guy to emulate. The shot making, I think, is pretty impressive. Like, he does stuff sometimes off the bounce. Like, the percentages aren't necessarily something that you're going to hang your hat on. You know, I had a guy, an NBA scout, tell me, like, if your team is super reliant on analytics, you're going to miss on Usman Jang, because he's a guy that you actually have to watch the tape on. And it's apparent, because some of the shot making stuff's pretty advanced for his age. I don't know how long it's going to take him to get to the point where he can consistently do that at the NBA level. Yeah. But when you see guys who have that potential, and you look at a guy like Anfernee Simons, who is, it's clear that he's capable of something like that. Jordan Poole. And I know that these are guards and not bigs, but I think that's kind of a tip of the cap to, you know, Usman, that he kind of has these guard skills that are apparent and the potential to do some guard stuff at 6'10. So I don't know. Where are you at with his shooting and his shot making?
So I wanted to ask you about the shot, because I thought, Corey, mechanically, I had a question about it, because I thought, and it may just be me, right? I thought it was a little like slingshotty from the left side of his head. There's like a little bit of like a, I don't know why I'm doing this on camera. Like, that's going to help you understand what I'm saying. But I thought it was a little bit slingshotty, but overall, like, I kind of like how his body squares up real nice and it looks pretty fluid. So wanted to ask you, Shot Doctor, what you thought about the overall shot. Cause that's something that I saw, but it could just be me. And maybe it's just like the biophysics of his body or whatever. So maybe you can shed some more light on that.
Yeah. I'm not really, it's not something I really picked on up on too much. I mean, it's not Lonzo Ball, you know, from in UCLA. I think that a lot of these young guys, they have that one motion shot. You know, they don't have like the Ben Gordon, you know, more like traditional beef type thing that you saw that you would learn growing up. I think, you know, Steph changed the way people want to shoot now. So he has a little bit of that. So sometimes that could be it. But I think if there was one tweak, sometimes he's like a little like hunched over when he's shooting. Like, I don't know. Like if you watch Chet shoot, he's up, he's tall, he's shooting at his peak. Sometimes Usman almost makes himself like 2 inches shorter when he's shooting. But ultimately, I think it's a smooth shot. He can knock it down off the catch and off the bounce. And I like it. I think he's there's a lot of rumors that he's, you know, rumored to be promised by Cleveland at 14 if he lasts that long. And I think that there's a shot that he's taken earlier, but he's the type of guy that I would bet on because he could handle the ball. He could initiate offense. He could play off the ball. And then I think ultimately he's going to be able to defend, you know, I think he's going to struggle with, you know, guys like, you know, cause if he's 6'10", 6'9", 6'10", he's going to be playing a lot of swing wing 3/4. And that's guys like Kawhi, Paul George, OG Anunoby, you know, Pascal Siakam, just guys that are really big and strong that are going to out physical, you know, like I'm more concerned about him dealing with the physicality than Chet dealing with the, with big men, you know, physically. Cause I think that the four position, which is really just like, you know, threes that are playing up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of strong guys that, that play that spot now, you know, like even Harrison Barnes is a guy that is just, or Andrew Wiggins, Jason Tatum are going to, you know, be a lot for him physically. But I do like his potential long-term on defense because I think he's long and disruptive and he has good feet.
No, for sure. I think guys like Marcus Morris would just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. Or at least talk about it.
Yeah, but yeah, I get it, man. Those threes, those tougher threes, right? Even like a Dylan Brooks, I think would give him a hard time. Not that Dylan Brooks is gonna be like, hey, you know, give me an inbound, throw me a pass and let me entry and let me post him up on the block. But I what do you think it is, Corey? I thought it was his lower half. Like with Chet, I feel like the reason why Chet can be so competitive as a big is because he's pretty strong in his lower half, although, you know, doesn't look like it. Jang, though, I was wondering, do you think it's the lower half? Do you think it's just overall muscle? What were you thinking with that?
I think it's embracing physicality.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Mentality. I mean, he definitely doesn't have the strongest core, you know, but to me, it's like, if you're going to embrace physicality, you're going to be fine, you know? And that, to me, that's the question is, you know, is he going to be quote unquote, like play tough, you know? And, and I think that the resilience that he showed throughout the season to finish as strong as he did, I think that maybe you could bet on him, you know, being playing tough down the line. Let's transition to one of these other guys. Let's talk about Tari Eason from LSU. He is the 19th ranked prospect on the No Ceilings composite big board, our final big board of the year. But Tari Eason is a guy that has really been an interesting conversation over the last couple of weeks. The LSU wing, 6'8", 7'2 wingspan, measured in with like Kawhi size mitts, which impressive. 220, 21 years old, just turned 21 years old. So a little bit older, although, you know, he's a sophomore. He averaged 17 points a game, 7 rebounds, 2 steals and a block. Shot 52% from the field, 36% from 3, 80% from the line. He did this all in 24 minutes, mostly off the bench. So there's this weird thing with him where he was ridiculously efficient in the time that he played. I mean, he had a 33.4 PER, 61.5 true shooting percentage. He had a 14.7 box score plus minus. Like, this guy was just really effective in the minutes that he played. And yet, you know, we have him at 19 on our board, our collective board. And this is a guy who is, you're either like, this guy is a top 10 pick, or you're like, yeah, I would let him fall to the 20s and take him there. What do you think is the disconnect between what the numbers and the production is saying versus how people feel about his game, because his numbers stack up with a guy like Keegan Murray, and he's in a very similar situation. So what's the disconnect?
Well, okay. The first thing that we have to mention, Corey, is that clearly there's some stuff that's going on off the court behind the scenes that we know nothing about. In my humble opinion, Corey, I feel like, I don't know. I know a lot of times, like, where there's smoke, there's fire. But at the same time, like, I do wonder, like, how much there is to all this stuff. Is some of it getting overblown? Are certain people reporting it in a fashion that's making it seem bigger than it is? But I think it's a little unfortunate that his stock right now is dropping a little bit, and it really doesn't have anything at all to do with his play on the court, which I think is really unfortunate because, as you mentioned, Corey, you watch him play, you go to his tape, and you actually watch the guy play. He's a really impactful player. And all those numbers that you just rattled off, they're not just empty calories, empty stats. Like, he was truly an impactful player. I think he was playing in a weird situation at LSU. Not the most talented, most organized, most fun roster or style of play or anything, all the above. But he was impactful in his minutes, as you mentioned, coming off the bench. It's hard to understand. And he's a guy that recently, Corey, I had to do like a double take, double deep dive into his tape because I didn't realize how much you loved him. And I was like, you know what? If Corey loves him, there's got to be something that I'm missing here too, because he was much lower on my board. And I went back and I realized, like, okay, yeah, like I was missing stuff. And there are like key principles and things that I believe in that I wasn't applying to Tari Eason. Like, the biggest thing for us is when we talk about shooting upside, guys who shoot the ball well from the free throw line, we happen to really like those guys as potential shooters. And for whatever reason, I was much lower on him on a shooter. And then I went back and watched his stuff again and then looked at his numbers. And I was like, well, okay, so I'm not really practicing what I preach here. He's actually a pretty decent looking shooter. So I guess maybe a good place for us to start with him is that I think he's going to be a good shooter on the next level. And I think there's enough proof there in college, obviously lower minutes, but shot it well from the free throw line, which is really important to us. The shot looks fine to me. I know it's a little bit different kind of from the side type of thing, but we saw it with Trey Murphy last year. We see it with a lot of different guys. I have no problem with how it looks. And that's obviously without us even talking about the defensive side, but offensively, I like the shot. I like the handling. I like the playmaking. There are a lot of tools there for him to work with. So I'm cool with Tari. I like Tari.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, you know, he's been mocked to the Bulls a lot at 18. Like, great. You know, one of my philosophies this year was like, what would Masai do? And would Masai Ujiri like draft a guy like Tari Eason? I think he would. I think he would bet on the measurables, on the fact that, you know, he was as productive as he was, and be like, hey, we could figure out the other stuff later, the processing, and like that stuff will be learned. He's got these really unique tools, and he was really effective in the minutes that he played. So I buy the shot too. Like, do I think he's a lock to be a 36% shooter? Not necessarily, but I think that he's a guy that ultimately, like you said, the free throw percentage is encouraging. He's a hard worker, clearly, and he's a guy that I think is going to be good enough that he's going to be able to attack closeouts. You know, and you see what he's like in the open court when he's able to get a step. He definitely needs to work on his left hand and his finishing package with his left hand, because he does really favor that right side to a point where NBA defenses are smart and they'll shade him and they'll weak him and they'll make him uncomfortable. But I think he's going to be physically strong enough to handle the NBA from Jump Street. And, you know, he might not get, you know, average 2 steals a game as a rookie. He might not average a block a game as a rookie. Maybe, you know, our friend Kurt in the chat said, you know, thoughts on his defensive impact, production being inflated due to LSU's chaotic scheme. I think that scheme always helps, but, you know, at the same time, he did what he was supposed to do. You know, if your coach is executing a specific scheme, and I think it's a little different than, you know, like if he was on Syracuse and you're trying to project forward in a zone, I think it's a little bit different. but I think he's going to be able to hard hedge. He's going to be able to switch. He's going to be able to guard on the perimeter, and he's got the length to recover. You know, I think that he's a guy that, you know, he's going to get to the line in the NBA. I think with the spacing and the way he attacks the rim, there are things he's got to improve, but that's why he's not a lock. But ultimately, I think he's a bet for that a team could take in the lottery. Now, you mentioned like there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes. Who knows how he's interviewing? But at the end of the day, these guys are young. And, you know, I don't love interview answers all the times that some of these guys give. But LaMelo had like a historically bad interview process.
Right.
And LaMelo Ball's been fine. So sometimes it's just a matter of these guys aren't like trained to be media professionals right. as young adults. But I think that Eason's a guy that if you get him at 19, at 20, it's like a home run pick. Cause I think he's a guy that ultimately like what scenario, how many scenarios does he just flame out of the league? A league that is trending with all of his skills is my thing. Like how,
yeah.
What do you think the likelihood that he's just not a guy who sticks in an NBA rotation?
I don't know, Corey. I that's a tough question. But the biggest thing that I want to piggyback off it, that I really agree with you, is that I think sometimes like the interview stuff can get way overblown. Like we see it in the NFL all the time, right? With like the Wunderlich test. I know they don't do it anymore, but they used to love like smart quarterbacks who can talk the game well. In the NBA too, like I'm sure Malik Rose was fantastic as an interview. How was his career? He was fine. I mean, he played a long career time. Yeah, career role player who what did he do? He let people post him up and then pull the chair on them and watch them trip over. And that's what he was known for in the NBA. Fantastic career, right? I think Tari Eason, even if his interviews are not great, I think Tari Eason is going to be a really good player who's going to offer a lot. I think, Corey, with what you're saying, like, I just feel like overall, like, considering what he can do and the versatility that he's going to offer, he will be just fine in the NBA. If anything, Corey, and this is not even like a critique or anything like that, just wondering if this is just what I'm seeing. Do you feel like he looks a little smaller than he's listed? Like I didn't feel he was as big as he's listed as. I don't know. It could be like maybe he has like long torso short leg syndrome or whatever.
Yeah. I think he's got those. I think his leg. I don't know if it's his legs are a little bit shorter than his upper body, or his length and his arms are so long that it makes his body look disproportional. Because I feel like he's like, I mean, a 7'2" wingspan is pretty impressive, but it almost feels longer looking at him, but I didn't feel like he was shorter. I mean, if he's listed at 6'9", 6'8", like he's listed at 6'8". I don't know. 6'8" feels legit to me, but you know, I think the issue with him, you know, I think sometimes he flashes pretty good passing reads, but he definitely doesn't do it consistently enough. He's definitely more geared to score the ball, to be a play finisher. One assist, 2.2 turnovers. You know, our friend Pierre from Through the Wire, you know, mentioned like during our Johnny Davis episode that he, you know, doesn't like the guys who have that negative assist to turnover ratio. He thinks that, you know, those guys ultimately, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. And I agree. And the NBA level, it's about quick decisions. It's about moving the ball. It's about playing, you know, trying to play the possession game. I think the Celtics, they were so loose with the ball throughout the playoffs. And that was ultimately one of the things that led to their demise. They just went into one-on-one and made bad decisions. And you saw that all throughout the playoffs. So I think that's the main thing with him. You know, the shooting, you have to buy long-term, and then the decision-making. But I like seeing guys improve. And, you know, he went from 46% from the field to 52% from the field.
Right.
He went from 24% from three to 36% from three. He went from 57% from the line to 80% from the line. You know, these are all positive signs, you know, and the defense, you know, that was always there. So I guess you have to buy in the fact that he did all this in low minutes. Why was he getting limited minutes? But Scotty Barnes came off the bench, played limited minutes. Patrick Williams off the bench, limited minutes. I just think he fits the archetype of the modern NBA. So that's why I'm willing to bet on him. Maybe he was a guy that back in the day, even a few years ago, I wouldn't have been as high on, but I think that now I think he fits the direction that the league is headed. And I think that, you know, as long as you're not taking him at pick 7 or pick 8, where you're like, he's your main guy. Like if you're a team like the Rockets who has one of these, you know, has two lottery picks, or you're a team like Charlotte who has two lottery picks, and you're rumored that you don't want to pay Miles Bridges, maybe that's a good way to fill some of that production, you know, taking a shot with the second pick at 15 or something.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And really quickly, Corey, before we move on, I think with Eason, yeah, like the first thing that I want to say, like defensively, I love how he moves laterally. I think that stuff's like really, really good. I think that's really going to help him a lot. Offensively, my one critique, this is my only one critique, and obviously, like, you know, this is fair for a lot of different guys in college or whatever, but I thought like in big moments sometimes he kind of disappeared, which I understand, you know, he's young, whatever, but there were times where, especially like SEC tournament games and whatever, like I felt like I was kind of like, where is he? And you know, there were certain times where he was kind of struggling to get to his spot and score and whatever, but I don't say that as like a fatal flaw. I say it more as like, hey, Tari, like, I think this is something that you need to work on as you get to the next level. Like I know that he's impactful and that he did a lot, but there were also moments that I thought he kind of disappeared. So that's something I'm hoping he works on.
And that's completely fair. And I think that, you know, like, you know, Frank Kirk, is Josh Jackson an unfair comparative case study in how Eason could be a miss? And I think that's probably the right kind of player as how he would be a miss. I mean, Josh Jackson was pretty good as a freshman. Mm-hmm. And there was that one thing, like I was always kind of worried about Josh. I wasn't a Josh Jackson guy personally. Same. But I could see that. But the difference is you're probably drafting Tari at the back end of the lottery / 15 to 20 range. You know, I've heard 23 is his floor at Philadelphia versus Josh Jackson, who was what, the fourth pick in the draft?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's expectations that come with that where it's harder to be patient with a guy like that. And then, you know, I think, you know, Josh had other stuff that he was dealing with. But
yeah,
as a player, I do think that's a fair downside comp.
I mean, just really quickly, I always thought like I never thought there was really a roadmap for Josh Jackson to ever be a good shooter. I really didn't like his shooting at all. And I thought the form and everything looked so weird and like just not fluid or connected. And there were so many moving parts. So I actually never liked him as a shooter. Meanwhile, Eason, though, you see him at the free throw line, it looks fluid. And I think there's a roadmap for him to be at least a decent shooter. So no disrespect to you, Kurt, but yeah. I like
his upper body. I know that he, you know, it's off to the side, but I think the upper body is fluid. Sometimes the footwork, I think, needs work. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's part of, you know, the body that we discussed with like the shorter lower half versus maybe that has something to why it looks a little funky sometimes. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Benedict Mathurin, who is, I think, one of the players in this draft that most people feel good about. except for you. You've kind of been out on him the whole year. But Mathurin comes in at number 10 on the No Ceilings consensus big board. 6'6", 6'9", wingspan, 205, just turned 20, sophomore, 17.7 points per game, 5.6 rebounds, 2.5 assists, shot 45% from the floor, 37% from three, 76% from the line. And the three-point volume was on about 6 attempts per game. He shot it 42% as a freshman. This is a guy that a lot of people would have drafted last year. He's athletic, could be a two-way wing. So, Benedict Mathurin, tell me your reservations because you've been iffy about him all year. And I don't know how much you've been iffy on this podcast about him, because we've mentioned him before. But you've definitely, you know, you've been in the chat being the guy that's like, let's think about this a little bit. So what is the holdup for you with Mathurin? And this is a guy that you saw multiple times live this year.
So, okay. I do want to say this. My position on Mathurin has gone back and forth so many times that at this point, I don't even know if I like him or hate him or not. It's a very strange experience I've had with Mathurin so my first experience with Mathurin was last year, where heading into last year's draft, I really liked him. And I was like, hey, don't go back to school. Enter the draft. He's a guy that NBA teams should take a bet on and grab at the end of the first round, was how I felt. I was actually super high on him last year. Then he went back to school, and then I watched more of his tape over the summer. And I remember I did a pod with Stephen Gillespie, and I did a deep dive of his tape. And I was like, you know what? I don't know if I like this guy as much. I don't know if I believe in the shot as much as everybody else does. And I don't think he's as elite of an athlete as everyone is claiming him to be. So that's where I started ending up. And I was like, it very negative in my head. I was like, yeah, people are overhyping his athleticism. The shooting is good, but it's not as great as people make it seem, blah, blah, blah. Then I go to watch him live, right? And I watch him live, and the guy is built like an absolute Greek god, number one. It's unreal. His physique is crazy, like absolutely insane. And then you watch him play, and you start to understand a little bit more as to why people like him. And also, like, I started tapping back into why I liked him in the first place, right? You can see, okay, the shooting is developing. The ball handling is developing. Him attacking the rim is developing. So, Corey, I think where I am right now is I like the developmental track. However, I don't know that I love him as much as I love the other wings in this draft, because I feel like some of the other wings in this draft either have higher ceilings or they have higher floors than him already. Is kind of how I feel about him right now, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And he's a guy I've struggled with, because there are times I've been super high on him. There's times right. I've been lower on him. Ultimately, I think he's one of the safer wings in the draft, who has the potential to be maybe, you know, a Victor Oladipo type guy if the ball handling and the shot making develops, if he goes to a situation where he's given freedom to kind of, you know, just not have to worry about getting wins necessarily, but he can focus on developing his weaknesses. But I look at the spots that he may be linked to, and I don't necessarily think he would get that opportunity on these teams. Like, unless he goes to a Detroit, maybe an Indiana, maybe, but I think Halliburton's doing and Cade are still doing so much of the ball handling. I struggle to find where he would be able to work out just, all right, it doesn't matter if you shoot 42% from the field. We just want to see you create your own shot consistently. But at the same time, going to a Detroit, an Indiana, a Portland, a New Orleans, a San Antonio, a Washington, these are all spots where he can continue to build off what he started at Arizona as a guy who is really good shooting off movement, as a guy who, and he hit some really tough movement shots,
yeah,
like hand in his face. I love that he gets elevation. I do think that he gets a little palmy with the ball sometimes, you know, and I'm a big, like, keep the ball on your fingertips kind of guy, but he hit a lot of tough shots. He could obviously hit off a knockdown. You have to respect him. You have to close out. And that's when he could use his athleticism and, you know, attack those closeouts to get to the rim. He's obviously capable of putting you on a poster. I agree. I don't think he's like an elite level athlete. I think he's a very good NBA athlete, but not an elite one. But I struggled with, like, for a while I was like, well, he's an easier fit than Johnny Davis. So I had them linked and I had him above Johnny. And I think I've said that on this podcast sometimes. But I went back and I put Johnny ahead of him when I went back again to watch Johnny's tape. Cause I'm just like, I think Johnny's going to be fine playing off the ball. I think it'll be fine. And I buy his self-creation and I buy his defense a little bit more. I think Mathurin's a good defender and has the potential to be a good defender. I know Nathan likes to give the Andrew Wiggins comp, which I think is a fair comp, but Wiggins is bigger.
Yeah.
You know, Wiggins is 6'8", 7 foot wingspan. Right. Mathurin's 6'6", with a 6'9" wingspan. There's a gap that I think that if he was just a little bit taller, I'd be a little higher on him. And maybe that is foolish. I don't know. But I think it matters a little bit when you're projecting him to, like, can he comfortably guard some of these new age fours? I'm not sure. Like, he seems more like he's going to guard like twos and threes versus threes and fours. And sure, like, he could switch off to fours sometimes, because like you said, he's very well built.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much like playmaking equity he's had. He's looked okay at times with, you know, playing pick and roll. I don't think he's ever going to be a high usage playmaker, but I think he'll be adequate enough. If Zach LaVine can turn into an adequate playmaker, I think that anybody can.
Yeah.
But does he get to the point, like, if you're taking him at six, mm-hmm. are you hoping that he just turns into like an efficient 18 points, 6 rebound, 3 assist guy? Or are you like, this is a guy I could see being a 24 point per game guy? Like, is that, because that's where I struggle. Like, I don't know if I see that he could be a 24 point per game number one option type of player. And I do think there are some out there that think that, and maybe he can be. I just struggle to see it.
No, I agree. And I think that's exactly the reason why he's getting mocked. Like, even I've seen some people mock him to the Pistons at 5.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, cool. So you want to grab a guy who isn't like, who can create a little bit, but isn't known for it yet. And you're really kind of taking a flyer here. What's the basis for taking him that high at 5 when a guy like Johnny Davis, who's proven that he can be the offensive focal point and the defensive focal point for a team consistently, why would you take Mathurin over that guy? Is kind of where I'm baffled. And Corey, for me, the big thing with Mathurin, I do want to give him credit though. He's really good at cutting off ball. His off-ball movement is actually phenomenal. And Agreed. The connection that he had with Kerr Kriisa and Dalen Terry was actually phenomenal. So I want to give him his credit there. I just thought defensively, there are times where he can float. And that's something that Rucker and I, we notice that when he's locked in and he can do a great job and switch and be physical with all kinds of guys. But when he's not and he's floating a little bit and he's losing his focus, it is not the best. So that is something that we have to worry about. But just going back to your question, do I see him as a 24 point per game type of guy? I really don't. And you know, even going to the Nate comparison of Andrew Wiggins, I agree with you. Andrew Wiggins is a lot bigger and he's like actually like kind of imposing how tall he is and how springy he is as an athlete. But Mathurin may end up being that type of guy, you know, like 17, 18 point per game, and he'll grab you some rebounds and, you know, have a couple of assists. But I just don't see the high end ceiling where he becomes like a number one option, where he's like even touching like 25 points per game. I just can't get there with him at all, actually.
I think there's a world where it happens. I just am not sure it's the outcome you want. Like, if he's the guy who's your number one option is averaging 24 points per game, mm-hmm. I don't, as much as I think he's going to be an okay passer, I just don't think he's going to be a good enough passer playmaker. Agreed. That it's going to make up for it. And look, Jaylen Brown, I think, has struggled consistently being a playmaker. He's a guy that's probably around the same height. I think Jaylen looks beefier now, but not coming out of college.
Yeah.
So maybe he turns into Jaylen Brown, and that's a guy who definitely can get buckets, but that I don't know if you want Jaylen as your number one option. He definitely showed that how valuable that ability is in the playoffs and in the finals. And a lot of times he was carrying the Celtics.
Yeah.
So maybe his upside outcome is Jaylen Brown as a scorer, as a guy who's he's going to rebound. He could play defense, athletic, can play off the ball, doesn't have to be your dominant guy, but next to the right guy can put up a good amount of points. But maybe that's like the ideal scenario, and I think it's going to be hard to replicate.
Yeah. I think more realistically, Corey, I see like Aaron Aflalo. I think that could be a more realistic outcome for him, where Aflalo had some good seasons of scoring. I think he had a season where he scored over 20 points a game.
With the Knicks? Was it with the Knicks? Orlando?
Yeah, he definitely did it with Orlando, but he did have like one decent season with the Knicks. But I could see, and that's not a slight either. Like, Aflalo had a good career, made good money in the league.
He's a good role player in Denver.
For sure. So I could definitely see that type of role for Mather. Maybe like an Aflalo plus, where he's like that type of player, but a little bit better, can offer a little bit more juice as a playmaker.
Yeah. And I still think he's going to be a better player than Aflalo was, but that was the name I was thinking in my head when it was like, if he's your number one option, that's kind of a scenario where it's just like rebuilding team, gets traded there, not leading to wins.
Right.
Empty calories type stuff. But I do think he's the type of guy that will be able to play on winning teams because he's so versatile as an off-ball player. Mm-hmm. And that's valuable. He's a lottery talent for sure. And I think there's an argument that, you know, when you look back, he could be the seventh or eighth best player in this draft pretty easily. I just think if you take him at five, you know, like he's been rumored at certain times, I would be weary because, like, and I know I'm obnoxiously high on AJ Griffin, but it's hard for me to find reasons why I would take AJ, like take him over AJ right now. Mm-hmm. When I think they're similar, AJ's younger, might be a better shooter, and I think he's got more on the ball equity.
Yeah.
You know, and I get the defense right now, people probably feel is worlds apart, but I think that all of AJ's defensive stuff is just coaching. And, you know, because the effort is there and he showed again, in my opinion, I might be alone on the island. He showed enough flashes, but.
Yeah,
the thing with Mathurin is he does feel safe. He does feel like a guy you could bank on. And the last guy we're going to talk about, I don't know if he's safe. I don't know if he's a guy you could bank on. I did. I've had him up as high as like 3 and 4 on my board.
Yeah.
Because when I just look at the film and I look at the talent, it pops. Man, does it pop. And we talked about how interviews do not make or break a player. These are young kids. They're being, you know, given advice. But fuck, Shaedon Sharpe has not interviewed well. Some of his quotes, that quote with the Kings.
Yeah.
They can get their little shine. talking about all-stars like Domantas Sabonis. National champions like Davion Mitchell. And high lottery picks like De'Aaron Fox. Champions like Harrison Barnes. They could get their little shine. I was like, oh, that's not good. I don't love that. So as much as interviews don't matter, do they?
I'm sorry, folks, for all the teams out there. I apologize. I'm being very unprofessional right now, but holy shit. Like, it's hilarious to think about the fact that he said that with an actual camera directed at his face is unbelievable, Corey. It's unbelievable.
And then he said, I think it was with the Pacers workout. He was like, they're like, what's the difference between, you know, what, or like, how are you preparing for the transition? Like, and he was like, I think it's going to be the same from high school to the NBA. And then he was asked why he didn't play like multiple times. And he was like, this was the best decision for me. It was not good. His interviews are like, if I was his team, I would say, just stop doing them.
Yeah.
Please, just stop doing them. But with that said, he's the 8th ranked prospect on the No Ceilings big board. He's a guy that I still think is so freaking talented that I would be willing to make the bet.
Yeah,
he's a guy that I spoke with a scout at a showcase last week, asking him, you know, how he's worked out, how he's looked. And he's like, you know, I haven't personally seen him work out yet. We're working him out next week. But if you can't see the talent that this kid has, this is not the business for you.
Wow.
And he's just like, it's just the only question is, what executive has the balls to select him? And that's what it's going to take, because this is a kid, and we've talked about him a few times. We've talked about him on other podcasts when we've, you know, I think we mentioned him on the Locked On Knicks podcast when we went on there.
Yeah.
His shot making is innate. You know, when we talked about Usman Jang and how his playmaking was something that you, and that feel was something that you can't teach. Shaden shot making is like, it's something that it feels like you can't teach. It's something that is just, he has these combo moves at such a young age. He's got range. It's effortless. He shoots a good ball. There's not much to critique and change other than like in his high school tape, he's settling for these shots, which is not abnormal for a high school kid in these unstructured settings, which is why it's so fucking frustrating that he didn't decide to play college basketball while he was at Kentucky, because you don't know what he looks like with structure. You don't know what he looks like playing with other high level players, playing in an offense, running sets, competing defensively. You don't know. Now, he's been partaking in competitive workouts. So I think that's a good sign, because I think that there's a world in which his team is just like, we're not working out, right? We're just doing 1-on-0. Like, we're not playing against anybody. So there, that's where it reels me back in. Like, okay, he's willing to play in competitive settings, but, and he's super athletic. Like, to me, and I know he's not like as bursty as maybe as you want, but as a vertical athlete, he's got great body control, even when he's not flushing it. And he's got some monster dunks. He's got that body control that's so fluid and natural that like he could do those up and under finishes and still I feel confident he's going to finish it. His offensive package is really impressive. It's really impressive. So that's why it's so hard, because he could legitimately be a multi-time all-star.
Yeah.
And I would take him over Benedict Mathurin.
Oh yeah.
But many people would not. Many people don't want the mystery box when you can already see what you're getting. And obviously, you know, we're not privy to actually like sitting down with him one-on-one, getting to know him, watching him behind the scenes, watching how he approaches his workouts. We're not privy to that necessarily. We can do our best to ask for intel and stuff, but like that's part of the process where like you could actually make these decisions and kind of project what kind of worker he's going to be.
Yeah.
I would buy the lottery ticket.
Corey, this reminds me. A couple nights ago, I was on TikTok. And for our listeners out there, yes, Corey and I are still young enough to be using TikTok.
Yeah.
I was on TikTok. And I saw this video of this kid. He walks into like an antique store and he's trying to buy like, I don't know, I think it was like a cup or a mug or something. And he goes up to the old lady at the counter and he goes, how much is this? And she's like, oh, $5. He's like, okay, I can give you $5 in cash or I can give you this mystery box. And she goes, I can't accept the mystery box. And he's like, are you sure? Like there could be something incredible in here. And she goes, I don't want the mystery box. And she's like, she starts to get a little agitated. I don't want the mystery box. He goes, cool. He pays her the money. He takes the cup and he opens. He's like, just out of curiosity, do you want to know what's in the box? And she goes, okay. He opens it up and it's like $10,000. And he's like, I would have given you the $10,000. And her mouth just, her jaw just drops to the floor. And I was reminded of that because that literally may be Shaden Sharpe for us. I think, Corey, just to kind of piggyback off of what you said, and I think I've said this before, either on this pod or in one of our group calls or whatever, and people may scoff at this, but there's a real world where 5 years from now, he's the best player in this draft. And I've imagined, and oh no, I said this to you. I imagined like the Detroit Pistons grabbing him at number 5, right? Going to Slam Magazine and having him and Cade do a cover shoot of those two guys in the retro Detroit Pistons jersey. And they're going to be like the next, I don't know, Grant Hill, Jerry Stackhouse, whatever, right? You know, like I could see that happening. The kid is a real bona fide talented player. Now, will this make sense? I don't know. And I love what you said. I was like, damn, like I wish he played at Kentucky. But Corey, if I could offer a little bit of maybe like a rebuttal to that, is maybe he watched 5 minutes of Sevier Wheeler and was like, fuck that, I'm out. is a real possibility, you know? And it's like, I don't want to play with that guy. So I, but of course, like the selfish side of us as evaluators is goddamn, like we wish you saw, we saw you play against other college basketball players. Like I get that. But the tools are sick. Like he is a freak athlete. Like the people who are putting that label on Benedict Mathurin, chill out and go watch Shaedon Sharpe. He's more of a freak athlete by a mile, in my opinion, right? The handle, the jumper, all that stuff, the confidence. There's no fear with this guy. He will take it to the rack and try to put somebody on a poster. So, God, I say all this, and I'm still terrified of him too. He ended up eighth on my board. So obviously I don't have him in the top three or the top five, but I couldn't drop him out of my top 10 either because that felt like an absolute mistake. Like a terrible mistake. So yeah, he ended up at eight for me, and everything that you said about him and his package and his skill set seems very real, and I can't wait to see it on an NBA floor.
And look, the passing is not there. He is a one pass away guy. He's going to pass it to the closest guy to him when he can't get a shot off. He's not hitting the Luka, Trae Young,
right,
coming off the screen, weak side hit. He's not doing that. His defense, very little of it. And again, unstructured, AAU, up and down. I wouldn't expect you to read too much into his defense in those settings. But if he went, like you said, to Detroit, and Cade could run the show, and he could just focus on running in transition, moving off ball, and getting his own shot, and just keeping the game simple. If he went to Indiana, and he was playing with Haliburton, and he could just focus on those things. If he went to Portland and he played off Dame and Simons, and you saw how good they were at developing Anfernee Simons, and it took a while, but ultimately it really paid off because that kid looks like he could be an all-star one day. I mean, there's something to that range. I have him seventh on my board. So in that range, I feel comfortable. I'm not passing on Jabari, Jaden Ivey. Like, I'm not the known quantity. You mentioned the mystery box thing. Well, there's also the Family Guy episode where, you know, Peter's offered a mystery box or a boat. And Peter's like, well, what if it's a boat in the mystery box? And then it's like, you know, comedy club tickets instead of taking the boat. So I get there's the opposite to the $10,000 mystery box. There's the other way where it could potentially be nothing. It could be bad. But there's a reason that he was the number one ranked guy in the 2023 high school class before he reclassified. There's a reason he was probably going to go into this year like mocked third after Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson. He's going to be one of the most interesting guys for us to follow next year, because it's going to show us like how much does missing developmental time matter. And it's going to be like, should you draft Shaedon Sharpe over Johnny Davis? Should you draft a Shaedon Sharpe? Because Johnny Davis, there's very few paths, I think, for him to be a superstar.
Few paths? Oh, okay.
A superstar.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay? When I say superstar, I'm talking about Luka. Giannis, Embiid, Luka. I don't think Johnny Davis has that potential in him. I don't know if Shaedon Sharpe does. But I think he has the athletic tools to... Right. At least make it a conversation. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
I'm with you, dude. He's terrifying. He's absolutely terrifying. And the ultimate test for me is I thought about it. If he's sitting there at 11, do I want the Knicks to take him? And the answer is yes, every single day of the week. So I think that speaks volumes as to how I feel about him as a prospect. Like, obviously there are concerns. There are things that we should be weary about, scared of. There are areas of improvement for him, but if he's there at 11 and my Knicks are there, I think the Knicks should take him every single day of the week. So
I'm with you. I think the Knicks should take him. I think he's for a lot of the reasons we said with Haliburton and, you know, and Cade. I think, you know, maybe he could be RJ's running mate. I don't know. I think, you know, play with IQ. Obi. Yeah. It's a fun young core to think about. How are we feeling about the Knicks? What are you making of these rumors? You know,
God, Corey, sometimes, to be honest, I just try to keep my hands away from my phone and let people go crazy on Twitter and not say anything, because I think it's absolute just pandemonium before the draft. Always, every single year, Knicks fans freak out about some potential trade of us moving up in the draft and grabbing some big name. And then all these Knicks fans go into their trade machines and say, you know, well, with the Kings, like, what can we throw at them? Ryan Arcidiacono, Taj Gibson. You know, it's nonsense. Like, I really don't see a world where the Knicks move up to four. I get it. I know Ian Begley mentioned some stuff and some offers have gone out there, and that's cool. Like, I'm sure Vivek got our offers and we're like, all right, fuck off. Like, I'm not giving you guys the fourth pick for whatever, you know, dimes and nickels and pennies that you guys have for me. I think the Knicks are in a great position sitting at 11. I think there are going to be a ton of options for us there. All these wings that we talked about today may be there at 11, and other guys that I absolutely love could be at that spot. There's a real world where Shaedon Sharpe falls to 11 and the Knicks just grab him there and would be a great pick. So as a Knicks fan, I think I want to tell all the other Knicks fans out there to just breathe. Like, we're going to be okay. We're not in a bad position right now. We have good young players on our team. We have assets. All these horrifying contracts that people want to portray as nightmarish contracts, all of them have team options on the back end. I'm feeling totally good. I feel fine. We're going to get a good player at 11. Or even if we trade back, I'm sure that Leon and our front office, they're going to make the best decision for our team. I actually have a lot of confidence in them, is where I'm at.
I think that that's how you should feel. I think that's rational. I heard last week that if the Knicks are going to trade in this draft, it's more likely they trade back than trade up. And that's what they did last year. You know, last year when we were watching live and trying to stay off, I don't know if we were trying to stay off Twitter or the Barclays Center's Wi-Fi is just so terrible that we couldn't get service. I'm not sure which one it is, because it's very hit or miss at the Barclays Center. But the Knicks initially, who they take? Keon Johnson before they traded back, right? And we got your reaction on that live. And then they traded back. So they have a history of trading back, getting value, finding their guys. Their scouting has been on point lately.
Yeah.
I would trust them whatever they did. If they did trade up, if they stayed put, if they trade back, I think regarding the draft, they've at least earned the trust of the fan base, because, I mean, talk to any Knicks fan. None of them are out on Obi. None of them are out on IQ. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves Grimes.
Sims,
you know, late in the draft. Got Rokus overseas. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves Deuce. Like, they've gotten guys, the Knicks fan base. So I think you're in a good spot. You get spot 11.
Agreed.
Someone's going to fall.
Exactly.
And that's why we did the wild card draft last week, because somebody is going to shake up the lottery. Maybe two somebodies are going to shake up the lottery, and somebody interesting is going to creep down the board.
Yep.
All right. Albert, tell people what's going on, where they can find you.
Yeah. You can find me at Alberto Gim on Twitter. A lot has been going on with No Ceilings. It's been unbelievable for us. Corey and Rucker and everybody has just been, it feels like we're throwing a perfect game right now. It's been unbelievable. Super proud of everything that we've been doing. As I've mentioned before, I did the Jalen Williams interview, which was a blast for me. Did the Dyson Daniels piece a couple weeks ago, or exactly 2 weeks ago, I think, which was fun for me as well. But yeah, we're going to be doing the live stream. Obviously, you're going to be talking about that after this, but it's been an exciting time and we're almost there.
We're almost there. I'm so excited for the live stream. It's going to be such a fun night. The team is amped for it. We've been preparing. We've been designing. And we got a cool giveaway that we'll announce on the stream. But we got a cool giveaway happening. It's all happening. You can find me at Corey Tulliba. Find my writing at noceilingsnba.com. Recently wrote about Chet Holmgren, why he's a unicorn, the best player in the draft, and why we should stop overthinking it with Tyler Rucker. And if you click on our names on the site, you could find all the pieces that we've written this year. Yeah. And this is as good a time as any to just go back and read through all the stuff that we've written, or just go into the search bar on noceilingsnba.com and type in a player, because we've written about nearly everybody. I got to count up how many articles that we've done, but we haven't missed a day, Monday through Friday. Some days we've posted multiple times, and we even posted on the weekends some of the time. So we did so much work for this draft that there's something for you to find anywhere. As always, if you have not done so and you're watching live on YouTube, make sure throw us a like, subscribe to No Ceilings TV. That's where the draft stream is going to be, 7:30 Eastern time on June 23rd. And then make sure to subscribe to the Draft Dak NBA Draft Podcast anywhere podcasts are available. Give us a 5-star rating. That would be the sickest. And we're getting close. The draft is fast approaching. It's your boys. We out. Peace.
Peace.